Okay, so there are a lot of interesting things to talk about. I want to talk about two things today, relating to Daf and Nun Vav and Aleph and Sefer Shabbos, and they both relate to David HaMelech. So you have the famous statements here in the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, Kol Omer David Chata, Eino Ela Toeh. Whoever says David sin is making a mistake. And this is a continuation of a number of similar passages. As we see from the Gemara, there are different opinions with regard to whether somebody was chote, whether they weren't chote, and even when we say that they weren't chote, it means they weren't chote in perhaps the most egregious interpretation of what they did. It doesn't mean that they weren't chote at all. And in fact, if you look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, so that Gemara seems to indicate that there are opinions that that there was even a serious fate that may have been committed. But the serious fate that appears from the text in Shmuel Beis, Paragid Aleph, that appears to have been committed by David HaMelech was Baal Eish Yisish. It appears that Bathsheba was a married woman and that he was Baal Eish Yisish. So the Gemara is saying that that's not exactly what happened. And there even appears to be a notion that maybe it was something that Shabikesh Lasas Loasa, that he had in mind to commit the act, but it didn't really transpire. Now, if you look at the Psukim, it appears very clear that the act did transpire, that he actually was a Ba'aleha. So one way of understanding it is in accordance with the statement of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar Rabbi Yonasan later in the Gemara, which is that when Nasan Anavi was giving Musa to David HaMelech, he said, "Vesishta l'karta l'chaliisha," that you took this woman, even though she was married to somebody else, likuchen yesh l'chaba, that there was likuchen, that there was legit, that it was legitimate for David HaMelech to be Ba'al Bathsheba. How could it have been legitimate for David HaMelech to be Ba'al Bathsheba? Let's assume that he was Ba'al Bathsheba, but how could it have been legitimate? That everybody who went out to the war in the time of David HaMelech, Kosev get krisus liishto, they would write a get to their wife. So we would understand that if Bathsheba had received a get from her husband Uriah Hachiti, then she wouldn't have been an Eish Yisish. And in fact, then there would be no chait of Eish Yisish that was committed by David HaMelech. And then the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Shmuel Aleph earlier on with the Milchemes Shaul that indicates that there was some sort of a common procedure at that point in time that husbands who would go out to war would ensure that their wives, Resavu Basam Tikach, that their wives would have some sort of a get that would free them from being an aguna in the event that the husbands would be lost in battle and nobody would know whether they were alive or dead. Or even in the event that they would be dead, that the wives would have a get, so that if they were in a chalitza situation where there were no children and there was a brother and there was a concern that maybe the brother of the deceased husband wouldn't give chalitza, that it wouldn't be necessary to have chalitza because the wife would already be divorced. So there was such a procedure of a get being given. So what was the nature of this get? And what is the connotation of the Gemara that likuchen yesh lecha ba, that he would have been able to marry her legitimately, even assuming that he was Ba'al Bathsheba? So let's first focus on the notion of likuchen yesh lecha ba. There's a very provocative comment which is made by Tosfos in Dibur HaMaska likuchen yesh lecha ba, which is a big question halacha lemaaseh. Tosfos says apa gata pidu chata. Even if David HaMelech had sinned, the fact that it's the Kuchen Yesh Lecha Ba, that he could legitimately marry her, so Tosa says, even if he had sinned with her, even if she was an Eish Yisish Gemurah, and David HaMelech sinned with her, he could have subsequently married her after Uriah Hachiti died. How could that be? We have a principle of Kishem Shasur Labal Kein Asur Laboel, that if somebody commits adultery with a married woman, then she's not allowed to remain with her husband, and she's also not allowed to marry the Boel afterwards. That's why there's a practice that Batei Din have in many places, that if they know that a woman who's getting divorced was having an adulterous affair, they'll make sometimes a notation on the pitur that the woman is already with another man, ukashem shasua labal, dot, dot, dot. And it's understood that any Masada Kiddushin would have to take into account if that same woman came in front of him to marry her off later on with her paramour from before she got divorced, that they would have to do an investigation and realize that this would be a Kiddushin that could not be performed. So Tosu says that there's no problem here. Akashem Shasua Labal to Ha'anusa Haisa, because this interpretation of the Psukim, and when it says that David HaMelech was Baha Basheva, was that it was Ayidei Onis, that it was a rape. And in cases of rape, a married woman, assuming that her husband is not a Kohen, does not become prohibited to her husband. And therefore, Tosos assumes that in a case where I don't say Kishem Shasuva Labal, because in a case of rape, where she didn't voluntarily commit adultery herself, but she was raped, she would still remain permissible to her husband. So Tosfos assumes that I don't then trigger the second part of the din, which is kacha surah leboel, that she would not be a surah leboel either. You can ask nimsachote nisker, but the clear understanding of Tosfos is that if she would be an anusa, if she would have been raped by David HaMelech, even if she was an Eish Yisish, she would have been perfectly legitimate for David HaMelech to marry her after Uriah subsequently died. B'sharia Labal, since she's permissible to the Baal, but who adin LaBoel, she would also be permissible to the Boel. So Tosfos just says, Mikol Makom, Likukin Yesh Lecha Ba'amash V'lo Haya Lecha Ba'aveira. The reason why the Gemara interprets this to mean that there was no Aveira altogether was because the expression, Likukin Yesh Lecha Ba'aveira, indicates that we're talking about a situation where there was no Aveira at all. But in Akinami, Tosfos seems to say, even if there had been an Aveira, since it was Ayidei rape, she would not have been Asura to the Boel. So this is a question, Halacha L'maaseh, if it's really true. It's one of the answers given in the Gemara Ksubas and Daf Tes Amud Aleph, when the Gemara there is talking about the woman becoming Asura L'Baila when she's in like a Sota situation. And the Gemara says, V'chitema Maaseh Shehaya Mipnei Malo Asrua. In the case of David and Basheva, why did she not become prohibited to David HaMelech? So the Gemara there gives two terutzim. Hasam onis hava. The first terutz is that it was an onis, that it was ayidei rape, and that would seem to be consistent with what Tosfos says, that if it's ayidei rape, that she doesn't become a surah leboel, the ibai zema. And the other answer is basically what we have in our Gemara, ki hadam rabbi shua banachmeni am rabbi yonasan, they call a yotzin l'mochemes beistavik, ya krisus kosev li'ishto, that whenever somebody went out to war, they first wrote a get, in which case, the reason why she wasn't a surah to David HaMelech was because she was apparently a divorced woman already at the time that he had relations with her. That Gemara over there doesn't seem to adopt the approach of Bikesh Lasos Veloasa. It's assuming that there was an actual act, an actual relationship. But with all of that, it was clearly permissible for her to remain with him, either because of teretz number one, that it was ayidei onis, or because of teretz number two, that she was already a divorced woman at the time that he had the relationship with her. So the Beis Shmuel in Siman Yud Aleph of Eben HaEzer points out that the opinion of Tosfos is not muskam l'kuli alma. Quotes a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi seems to indicate that in a case of rape, while the woman would not be a surah labal, she would, however, be a surah labal. And he says that the machlokis between Tosfos and the Yerushalmi is basically whether you understand that the first teretz in the Gemara is the Ikar teretz, namely that the reason she wasn't a surah to David was because it was ayidei onis. That's what Tosfos seems to assume. Or whether you hold that the second teretz is essentially a rejection of the first teretz, and the second teretz that says that the reason she remained permissible to David HaMelech was because she wasn't really married at the time that he had relations with her, that constitutes a rejection of the notion that she would have been permissible to David HaMelech if he had relations with her while she was an Eish Yisish Ayidei Onis, that is rejected halakha l'maaseh. So the Beis Shmuel says that if you understand that the Ikar is the second teretz, that would explain the Yerushalmi, and you would have to be machmir if this ever came up ledin. The Beis Shmuel later on, in Eben Ezer and Siman Kuf Nun Zayin, points out that since there is a ruling of the Ramah, who says that even though according to the Gemara, Midina Gemara, if a woman who's a Shomeres Yavam, she lost her husband, now she's supposed to do Yivam or Chalitza, if she's Mizana with somebody else, so she doesn't become a Surah to the Yavam. Under normal circumstances, if he's not a Kohen, she doesn't become a Surah to the Yavam, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch rules that she is permissible the event that she becomes available later on. She is permissible to marry the person she was Mizana with. And the Ramah says, but because we institute a knas, that because of a knas, though, as a penalty for the action, we don't permit her to marry the person she was Mizana with. So the Beis Shmuel points out, and this is noted in the Pesachei Tshuva and Siman Yud Aleph as well, that we would presumably, at the very least, say that in order to be consistent, that just like in that case, even though there was no Kashem Sharsuva Labal, but because of a knas, we say that she can't marry the person she was Mizana with, so we should certainly impose that knas upon a person who was Ma'anes her, a person who committed rape with an Eishes Ish, that even if Me'ikara din, we would paskin like the first teretz in the Gemara, to say that Me'ikara din, he's allowed to be married to her, but it is certainly based on this knas that's found in the Ramah in the other case, we should similarly apply the knas to this case, and at least not lechatchila, allow them to get married. What's the nafka mina as to whether you would prohibit them miyikaridin or prohibit them ayidik nas? The nafka mina would be a misse slotetze. The lechatchila, we wouldn't allow them to get married if it was based on a knas, but if they were already married, we wouldn't compel them to be divorced. If we would paskin like the Yushami, that miyikaridin, they weren't allowed to get married, the miyikaridin, we would say that the Baal is not allowed to be with a woman whom he raped when she was in Eishes Ish, so then even b'dieved, they wouldn't be allowed to remain married. Okay, so that's the first the halacha l'maisa discussion. The second halacha l'maisa discussion, of course, relates to the very premise of the notion that when they would go out to Milchoma, they would have the husbands write gittin for their wives. What exactly was going on over there, and to what degree is this practice still relevant to Lachal Amaiseh Bisman Hazeh? Yes?
With the onus, is there any remez in the psukim that David was, an act of onus with her? It doesn't sound like the psukim Tanakh that I would think of such a thing.
Says he saw her, he went over to her, and he was Ba'alel. Then he had relations with her. The psukim did not actually say that it was ayidei onus, that there was a fight or a struggle or anything of that sort, but that's what Tosfos says on our daf, and that's what the Gemara says explicitly in its first teretz in the Gemara in Ksubas on daf Tess Amud Aleph. So, yes?
I heard of a case once where a person was getting a divorce, but they weren't so religious, and they didn't know that they needed their halachic divorce, and they got a legal divorce, and then they married someone else, and then they realized they needed a halachic divorce. What's the halacha in a case of shogeg, where a person, it was not ones, but it's not like, they just didn't know. Is that a rule of battle about?
So that's a whole discussion in Ibn Ezra. I think there's a famous ma'arik on this, there's a whole debate as to whether if a person was sort of, didn't know whether in such a case the principle would apply. So the argument for leniency is that it's a complete, that it requires that there be some sort of a bogate of the Baal, that you're rebelling, that she's somehow, betraying the Baal. And in this case, she's not betraying the Baal because she thinks that she's basically already free from the Baal. And it's only a problem if it's bogus. So the case that he talks about is where the husband had given permission for her to have a relationship. So he says that doesn't cure the problem because in that particular case, there's still begida because she still knows that she's cheating on the Baal. But in this case, she didn't even know that she's cheating on the Baal because there wasn't the need for a get. So the poskim talk about whether there might be more room for leniency in such a case. I think Rav Moshe has a tshuva on it, but I have to be mayan in the tshuva to tell you his bottom line. Don't remember his bottom line, but I seem to recall Rav Moshe does have a tshuva on the subject. So we'll take a look and see what Rav Moshe said. But there might be room for leniency in that particular case. Okay, so there's a machlokis here between Rashi and Tosfos, and it's the same machlokis between Rashi and Tosfos on Ksubas and Daftes, the Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, as the weather, when it says get krisus kosev the ishto, so Rashi says it means that they would give a get out tonight. That the get was on condition that if the husband would die by milchama, she would be mikoreshes the mafreya. She would be mikoreshes from the moment in which the get was given over. It's not only in a case, if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi spells that it's not only in a case where we would know that he was dead, but wherever he didn't come back from the milchama, there'll be a stipulation. If he didn't return from the milchama, maybe he's dead. Maybe he's missing an action and we can't determine he's dead, but so the woman won't be an aguna because we can't determine the whereabouts of her husband. And there would be this conditional get that if he doesn't return from the milchama, so then she's a migureshes me'aksha from the moment in which the get is given over. So Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, who says that disagrees, basis for the disagreement, at least in the Tosfos and Awadah, was that there is a shita who says that when a get is given mehayom imati, a person gives a get from right now, in the event that he's going to die later on, that there's a shita, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that during that time period between when the get is given and when the condition is fulfilled, she's ke'ishis ish l'chol dvarev. So how can you say that David HaMelech didn't sin if that's the case? There's the Tosfos in Ksuvos has a different objection. Tosfos in Ksuvos says that even if you argue that there's a difference between me'akshav and me'ayom, me'akshav, for sure, the get would be retroactively valid from, you know, and there wouldn't be a problem of her being with, at least retroactively, the fact that she was with somebody between when the get was written and when it was clear that the condition was fulfilled. Still, there would be a suffix, at least, as to whether the condition would be fulfilled. Maybe Orya Hiti would never end up dying. Maybe Orya Hiti would end up coming back from the milchama. So we see from the psukim, David HaMelech kind of manufactured things, or at least the simple pshat of the psukim seems to be that he manufactured that the Uriya Hiti would be sent to the front lines and that he would be killed in battle. Certainly there couldn't be a guarantee that Uriya Hiti would die. So if we're trying to vindicate David HaMelech and say that he didn't really sin, Tosfos says it's difficult to vindicate David HaMelech on the basis of a get that's given out tonight when it's not 100% guaranteed that the tonight is ever going to be fulfilled. So Rabbeinu Tam has a different pshat. Rabbeinu Tam's pshat is that an absolute, unconditional, irrevocable get was given by the people who went out to war, with the understanding, of course, that at least if they weren't a Kohen, when they would be able, when they would come back from war, if they would be fortunate to return from the battleground, they would have the opportunity to remarry their wives, but at least this way the wives would know they wouldn't be an aguna because they would receive an unconditional get. The kasha the Tosfos brings on this pshat is that the Gemara in Bava Metzia, I think also in Sanhedrin, indicates that David HaMelech was considered to be at least a Baal Safek Eishes Ish, because David HaMelech was critical of those who would taunt him in the Beis Medrash and say, you know, that a person who's Baal Eishes Ish, so what is his punishment? So David HaMelech would say, well, his punishment is chenek, but at least he has a chenek le'olam haba, but somebody who's malvin is b'nei chavei barabim doesn't have a chenek le'olam haba. So we see from here that it's better to be Baal Safek Eishes Ish than to be malvin is b'nei chavei barabim. But at the very least, the case of David HaMelech is referred to as a Baal Safek Eishes Ish. So according to Rabbeinu Tam's understanding, it wouldn't even be a Safek Eishes Ish, that there was an absolute get that was given beforehand. Therefore, how can you say she was a Safek Eishes Ish? So Rabbeinu Tam gives the teretz that maybe because of the fact that people were divorced but sinna, that's why it's a Safek Eishes Ish, because people wouldn't necessarily know that the that Bathsheba was no longer married to Uriah Hiti. Since all these gerushin were done very, very privately, the idea was that it wouldn't have to be publicized, because if he would return from the battle, he would be married his wife. So because it was done privately, so it was kind of like a form of Suffolk Eishes Ish, because it wasn't so well publicized. So the question arose, yes?
But how can it be? I mean, everyone knows about it. Everyone goes out to work, it's this type of get, and it's Yadua, the wrong incentive.
It could be that it was an opportunity that was given to everybody to do it, but maybe not necessarily everybody did it. Meaning that there's a suffix in each case as to whether they did it or they didn't really do it. Rav Herzog, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, writes in his tshuvos, he has a number of tshuvos in the Chelek Beis of Eben Ezer, starting from 7 Lamed Vav and going until Mem Aleph, so about the takanos that were made for Israeli soldiers who were going out to war. When they had, for example, the war of 1948, and there was a concern that whoever would fight in the battle might not return. Maybe they'd get killed, and maybe we wouldn't even be able to discover their whereabouts. And therefore, they wanted to do a similar type to Kona. There were tshuvas by the Dibrei Malkiel, going back already over 100 years for Russian wars, where there was such a concern about implementing this type of solution of a get for people who are going the Mechama. Should they do it in accordance with the Rashi method of a get out tonight, or should they do it according to the Rabbeinu Tam method of a of an unconditional get? So he notes that however they decided to implement it, most of the soldiers did not take advantage of the opportunity, even though it was out there. So most of the soldiers did not take advantage of the opportunity. And eventually, even though the Israeli army, which Rav Herzog is critical about the Israeli army, that they didn't push it enough, but the Israeli army came to the conclusion that they did not want to push this at all because they felt that it was bad for the morale of the soldiers to engage in this type of a giving of a get or a conditional get to the wives at wartime. Rav Chaim Ozer, in the tshuva that Rav Herzog brings, says that he was in favor of doing the conditional style again. So there were problems with each one of the two different approaches. I mean, the problem with doing the conditional get is that already the Mordechai in Siman Tov Mem Gimel at the end of Maseches Gittin says that Bisman Hazeh, we try to stay away from conditional gittin because it's difficult to do conditional gittin correctly. It's very complicated. The dinim of when you do a condition, you can have a condition during the writing of the get, just during the giving of the get, exactly how the condition should be formulated. It's very, very complicated to do a condition properly. So even in the case of a get shchiv meira, where it used to be commonplace that a man was very sick, he was on his deathbed, and he wanted to give a get out of love to his wife so that she wouldn't be... so she wouldn't be zekuka liyibum, so that she wouldn't be in a situation where she would have to do yibum or chalitza if he died. So he would say, if I die from this sickness, so then this will be a get. But there were problems. People would also have lots of arguments about, did he die from that sickness? Did he die from another sickness? There were all kinds of problems with it tonight. So Rabbi Yechiel Mipariz, quoted by the Mordechai, ruled that they should just not have tenayim altogether, that they should just give an outright get, and everybody would make kind of like a shavua of sorts, that if he should recover from his illness, that he would agree that he would be marrying her, and she would agree that she would be marrying him. So that approach of Yechiel Mipariz is quoted in the Aruch HaShulchan and the Seder again to me at the beginning, that nowadays we stay away from doing conditions on Gittin because it's so complicated and we're worried we're not going to get it right, so we don't do conditions on Gittin. So that's an argument against doing it for open shell tonight. A second argument is, of course, the morale issue, that whenever any get is given over from the husband to the wife, it's actually handed into her hands, even if it's handed al yedei shliach, but she actually has a get in her hands. Even if it's al yedei tanai, it does kind of dampen the relationship, and it also potentially makes the husband feel a little bit less married when he's out in war. You know, if in case he should encounter peril, sometimes it's a little bit of a comfort to know that he's still married, that this could be, you know, somewhat daunting if he already wrote the get. And the third concern is that if a get is written, it's you have to worry about that since it's not going to be effective until later on. If he comes back, say, on a furlough, and he's with his wife, so that could be viewed as a cancellation of the get, the Shema Pies, that since the get hasn't yet become completely valid, so this could be an abrogation of the Tanayim of the get, now that he's together with her again, and therefore that could cause the get to be invalid, and also can create problems of Shema Yomu Gita Kodem Livna, that if a child is born from a subsequent furlough, since the date of the get, when it was given over, is an earlier date, so people will say, even though the get only, you know, becomes finalized when he doesn't return from battle, the Shema Yomu Gita Kodem Livna, and in any event, how does he have a right to be with her if he would want to be with her? given that the get retroactively will be chal from the day that he gave it over, so then in a best case scenario, he had relations with a penuya, which is something which is inappropriate. So those are the problems of doing a get al tanai, even when the enactment of the Rav Yechiel Miparis was put into place, it led to problems also, because the get is given unconditionally. If it's based on an expectation that they're going to remarry each other, let's say that he returns from battle and she doesn't want to remarry him. So do we say that the get is void because it was understood that he was only giving the get on that condition? That's what happened in the famous case in the days of the Sma, of the get Mivaina, where Shchid Meirah basically gave a get to his wife with the understanding that if he gets better, that she'll remarry him. And then she said, Bishum Ofen Lo, she didn't want to remarry him. And there was a big deal and a big machlokis among the major poskim at the time, Aram Lublin, the Sma, many got involved in this machlokis as to whether the get was valid or not. So that's a problem of an unconditional get. An unconditional get might lead to pipukim later on if one of them doesn't want to marry the other when they do return. The other problem with the unconditional get is, what do you do in the case of a kohen? Case of a kohen, the unconditional get, he's not going to be able to remarry her if he returns from war. And with the case of the unconditional get, you certainly have a problem of morale, that it's certainly going to be potentially harmful to the morale of the soldiers who were married a day before they went out to war, and now that they're not married anymore. So that's going to be problematic. And forget about furloughs. They're not going to be able to, have a day together once they're completely divorced, unless they have a new kiddushin, and then they'll have to do a new get every single time that there's a furlough, that there's a few days that the husband is allowed to come back from battle. So the solution that was introduced that Rav Herzog has, this nusach in Simon Mem Aleph of Chelik Beis of Eben Ezer and his Chuvos, and this was the basic form that was employed by various Batei Din in the files and archives of the Beis Din of America. There's such a form that was utilized in connection with World War II. And there are even filled out forms from the Vietnam War that were used by those going out to war. I don't know if any of these cases ever came to fruition. Hopefully not, but the form basically says that there's no get that's given right away. What there is instead is an authorization for a get to be written. And the form basically says, in the event that I do not come back, the husband says, in the event that I do not come back from war, after a period of time passes and the Beis Din makes a determination of when that period of time will have passed, and it looks unlikely, like in the opinion of the Beis Din, that I will be returning, then I authorize the following sofer to write the get, and the following to aid him to sign the get, and the following shliach to deliver the get. So in the event that he's dead, his wife is going to be mutaris mimonav shach. Either he's dead, in which case she's an almana, or if he's alive, then the get will be able to be written on the premise that he's alive. And the assumption is he was in a good, sound mind when he authorized the get, and he's still in good, sound mind, so that he has the ability to appoint a shliach to... for the get to be written and for the get to be delivered, and this way through the writing of the get, at that point in time the wife will be permitted to remarry. But it doesn't create as much of a morale issue because there's no get written right away. The wife doesn't even have to know about it. She doesn't have to participate because it's simply that he is privately issuing an authorization of a get to be written. Now, one possible downside is that, let's say, the sofer is not alive anymore. Like, if he's appointing a get to be written right then, so the sofer is standing in front of him, he writes the get then that day. Or let's say the Eidim aren't alive anymore. Let's say the Shliach's not alive anymore. So here, you can employ, in this Shas Hadchak situation, the approach of the Maharam Mibrisk that's quoted in the Pesukei Teshuva in Eben Ezer, Simen Kof Chav, who says that Bitsir of various shitos, you could do the following with respect to an appointment of a get. There's a machlokis as to whether a pikeach, a person of sound mind, who's able to articulate that he wants to get written, can appoint a sofer and aid them in writing. So that's one machlokis. It's machlokis rishon as to whether a sofer, aid them, and shliach could be appointed in writing. So we say that we're going to allow him to appoint in writing, and he'll say in writing, anybody who sees my signature has the right to serve as a sofer. Anybody who sees my signature can be eidim. Anybody who sees my signature can be a shliach. So according to at least one sheet in Rishonim, that's considered to be a direct minoy, ayyadei ksav, as if he would actually be speaking to the person directly. There's a separate machlokas Rishonim as to whether a minoy shlo b'fanav is kosher. Whether, if let's say it's a verbal minoy, and the person verbally says, I'm appointing anybody who sees my signature on this form to be a sofer, and anybody, any two people to be eidim, and any one person to be a shliach, whether that's considered to be a direct minoy, or whether that's considered to be a minoy shlo b'fanav. The Ran holds that it's good, the Ramban holds that it's not good. So the Marami Brisk says that if it's you of the shita of the Ran, you can have the person do such a minoy of anybody who's going to basically, you know, see their signatures. They can, you know, or even if the sofer and eidim are not present, that a person's been a chokim, they could utilize this this type of form. And they also have the person sign it and verbalize it and also sign it, so that between the different shitos, you're covered one way or another. Either the verbal authorization is good or the ksiva is going to be good, but then it's considered to be a direct minoy. So even if the original sofer and eidim are not there to begin with, or they're there but they died and you have to rely upon the minoy of other unnamed individuals who are going to see the form, if that's considered to be a sufficient minoy for a get to be written. So that is the mechanism of the kisfu to new form. And this way, there is at least an assurance that if the person doesn't return from war, that a get would be able to be written on behalf of his wife. Now, the only the downside with this particular solution is, number one, you have to rely to some degree on this non-direct minoy, which is subject to a machlokas of different shitos, but Lamaisa, the Kedai and Marami Briska, Lismoch Alo B'Shas Havchak, but they did all over the world rely upon this type of mechanism when a husband is in a very far remote location and there's no sofer and eidim in front of him, that we have him, you know, write the, sign these kisru to new forms and declare the appointment in front of other people who are not the sofer and eidim, and this is relied upon B'Shas Havchak anyway, so therefore that can be relied upon B'Shas Havchak. But the other downside is that this doesn't help out in chalitza situations. That if there's a chalitza concern, that the man who's going out to war has no children, but he has a brother, and we're worried that the brother would not be willing to perform chalitza, so then you still have a problem, because even with the mimanoshach that we mentioned, the mimanoshach won't work. What was the mimanoshach? That if he's dead, so the wife's an amana. And if he's alive, so then she becomes a grusha. Well, in the event that we have to worry about her becoming zikuka liyabam, we're not so clearly out of our troubles based on the tzad that he might be dead. Because based on the tzad that he might be dead, the get doesn't make her into a gusha, because she was already an almana. Then she's still going to be zikuka l'chalitza, because we can't assume that the husband is still alive for purposes of treating her as a grusha. Maybe she's really an almana, in which case she's zikuka liyibum. So it could be that even bisman hazeh, with the reliance upon these kisfu to new forms, if it's known that there's a situation where the husband doesn't have any children and he has a brother, then maybe, and we have a brother who's unlikely to be cooperative with respect to a chalitza, so then there's more room to also add, in addition to the kisru to new form, to have a get done ayyadei tanai as well, so that b'di'evan, maybe that would be something that could be relied upon if she ends up in a chalitza situation and the brother refuses to give a chalitza. In fact, if you look in the tshuvos of the Igros Moshe, so the Igros Moshe in Chelek Dalet of Eben HaEzer, Simon Kuf Yud Aleph, where Rav Moshe Feinstein has his recommended form for those who are going to be leaving for battle. So Rav Moshe has sort of a double form, where he does a get out tonight, but that get out tonight is supplemented through a further kisvu to new appointment. So it could be that in the case where you have to worry about the potential of a subsequent chalitza, maybe that form is appropriate to be utilized. But lemaisa, in my own experience at the Beis Din, when we had certain soldiers who were going out to the Persian Gulf War, for example, there were some inquiries from a local rabbanim and from various people who were soldiers who were going out to war. Sometimes they were chaplains, or they were soldiers, Jewish soldiers from Orthodox communities, wanted to execute some sort of a kisru to new form that could be that would enable their wives not to be gunas in the event that they would be lost in battle. So we actually facilitated the execution of a few of those types of forms, so that at least there would be peace of mind. And again, of all of the different forms, this presents sort of the fewest amount of potential problems in terms of not having to write again right away, but having a safety hatch in the event that for whatever reason the person tragically didn't return from battle. Baruch Hashem, there were no cases in which we got a call in which we were asked to actually write a get based on the execution of any of these forms, but we did actually prepare them in a few cases. So this notion of writing a get, kishiyotze, the milchama, actually, believe it or not, still does have some halakha l'maase application bismanase. Yes?
Why does the conditional get help with the chalitza case?
The conditional get helps in the chalitza case because that case says that he's giving her a get right away, with the understanding that if he doesn't return from a battle, that get will be chal me'achshav. It's going to be valid immediately right now. It's not a get that's going to be valid when it's written 2 years from now. It's going to be valid starting from this moment in time. That's and therefore, she'll be a grusha. And not an amana. Once she's a grusha, she's divorced from her husband, she's not sekuka the yibum anymore. So that's why it would be helpful in that particular case. Okay, any questions? Very good.